What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we're with the Vandaliers. Right now, we're with Josh Fleming, and we're waiting on Corey Graves. Hopefully, he'll pop in here in a minute. But how you doing, man?
Doing good. How are you?
Good, dude. Good. We were chatting a little bit before we started, but we wanted to save most of it for the recording here, so we have something to talk about. So I guess I'll just start out with what you guys have been up to lately. I know you guys are big road dogs and you guys are always torn. So just get us a little update on where you're at right now.
For the year, we started in UK with, I guess we started at Mile Zero Festival. Then we went to the Outlaw Country Cruise. Then we went to the UK with Bowling for Soup and Less Than Jake. Came home. Did a small tour with Mariachi El Bronx, went out as a headliner with Eli Howard and The Greater Good and Ian Byrne. And then now we just got back from Americana Fest. In between, hey, what's up, Corey?
There he is. What's up, man?
Not a lot.
We got you loud and clear, man. We just started. You got here just in time.
I'm sick. I think I was, I don't know, I was waiting on a different link or something. It was just like rotating. I was like, I don't know, this seems wrong. So I got out and back in. Now here I am.
We got you, man. We're good to go. I was just asking Josh here what you've all been up to. It sounds like you guys have been pretty busy.
Yeah, we stay that way.
Good shit. So I guess let's start back at the beginning so people get a little familiar with your guys' band. We'll start out with, I guess, how you guys met and when you guys formed and how you kind of all came together.
In 2015, I was in the studio with my friend John. I had written a handful of folk country style songs. I didn't really know what to do with it. I've always been in like punk bands and rock bands. So I went over there and we started demoing things out. And then I just started calling my friends. I was a barber in Dallas at the time. So I kind of had, that's how I knew Corey more personally, but everybody had already been in bands and like been around, we were all stalwarts of the scene in DFW. So I just kind of called and kind of handpicked people that I liked being around. Mm-hmm. When that album came out, it was, we just made 100 CDs and we booked like one show and we sold the 100 CDs and a lot of people came to the show. So we booked another one and we got t-shirts and then all the t-shirts ran out. And then 9 years later, we're a band still. And it was, we're on our fifth record now. We've toured the world. We've kind of found our place within cowpunk community. We kind of wedged ourselves between Americana and punk music. And we found our spot. And it's really cool. And it's been really great. And it's kind of given us a platform to connect with everybody and given us a place to kind of grow. Corey and I were both in bands that, you know, we're very different. So when we got together, we got a lot of press too. Mm-hmm. So that helped. Every time we record, it is its own thing. But I feel like it grows every time and it's developed. So it's just like, I don't know. It's been a great band and for all 9 years of it so far and hopefully nine more.
Right, yeah. On. Everyone had been in bands before this one. And then, there was a lot of things that we didn't like about those bands. So when we were putting this one together, we all just said, no assholes allowed. And we were just selective of who got to be in the band. Like when we decided that it was going to be a full-time touring thing. So we just didn't want to be in a van for 8 hours with a guy we weren't going to like in a month, you know? Yeah. And it's been pretty much the same people for 10 years. So we did good.
We did great. Yeah, I don't even think when we started we knew we were going to tour. It was just, it all happened pretty quickly. Like, we had a booking agent, 6 months into the band?
Yeah,
you
man,
know, it was really fast. We had a local label pick us up, really quickly. We got signed to Bloodshot a couple of years later with that. It just all kind of happened really organically. I don't know if anybody was really after something right off the top, but when we started getting momentum, and it just got more fun, you know? So yeah, it's always fun to play in front of 7,000 people.
Oh yeah.
Every time. Yeah.
So having the unique style that you guys have, and it's clear like current day, like you guys are killing it. And, but when you guys first started out, was it hard to kind of find your way like in the Texas scene, or was it, it sounded like you guys had momentum from the start. Is that the case?
Yeah. I mean, we just didn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
That was we knew we were going to be different. It really just came down to, there was an Americana scene, there was a punk scene, and there was a Texas country scene, and we just played all of it. Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't, you know, we would play honky tonks, and then we would also play punk bars. We'd play rock clubs. We played, our circle started really small. It was just DFW for a minute. Then we added like outside cities like Oklahoma and Oklahoma City, Wichita Falls, Tulsa. And then like, it just progressively got bigger and bigger and bigger. So we didn't have to do what like the regular Texas country bands do, which is only tour Texas and surrounding states. Because our first tour was a West Coast tour.
Oh, wow.
For better or for worse, you know, that was just like, we wanted to, if we were going to tour, we were going to tour like that. It was beautiful. I think we all got the bug. After that, our agent was happy and booked us another one. But like at the beginning, we were okay with being kind of the outsider band anyway. We were playing with, I think our biggest break was when we went out with Old 97s.
Oh, nice.
Right, Corey? That was that's like 2017.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. And then when Lucero took us out in 2019, I feel like that was when, at least in a touring visibility, that's when I think like we really came into our own. And that's when we started getting opportunities from not just the country scene, but also the punk scene. That's when we got like the Flogging Molly tours and like the cruises. I feel like once we went really hard to the punk side, all of our country friends and fans were like, whoa, 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 come back, come back, come back. And so we started like opening up for like Turnpike. Like we opened the first two shows, they came back at Kane's, and then we did the Ryman with them. And then after we did that, we went out with like Silverada, Joshua Ray Walker, it's Summer Dean and us did a tour. So it was just really, it's always been a big, wide reaching net. It's never really, so like if the country scene didn't accept us, the Americana scene would and the punk scene would. So we never really had all of our eggs in one basket. So I don't think we were very worried about it, and it served us well.
Yeah.
I think at first you're just trying to play wherever will let you, because you don't have a reputation yet. So it's just like, who will book us? And we would say yes to everything.
Yeah, we were playing in Austin at, what was that place? Vegas?
Hotel Vegas.
Hotel Vegas. And then we would turn around and like play a very family friendly hotel set. You know, so, it's had that versatility, and so it kind of alleviated some of that stress of acceptance.
Yeah, and I'd imagine, and if I'm wrong, let me know. But like with having that unique sound and that versatility to like really dive into the country Americana punk scene, whether there is some kind of fan backlash or like you said, like a hey, come back kind of thing. It has to have helped you though, to be able to
call that pruning.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll prune all of those. I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and like that had to have like helped though, being able to like go all those different lanes and really get your name out there. It might've like even accelerated your guys's like progress. Maybe. Is that true?
I mean, maybe it depends on what you're comparing us to, you know. I feel like for us, we've had a really gradual growth. I think that we've stayed true to who we are the whole time, which kind of, you know, if there was any backlash for anything that we've ever done, Corey and I have always viewed it as just like dead leaves falling off a tree. it's not really that big of a deal, because the more authentic you are, that's the thing that attracts your people, you know. So the right, yeah, all the people that really support us, really like our music, really like think we're funny or think we're cool, those people are all here, and they accumulate now. But back then, it was just, you know, just find the people that, you know, understood what we were doing.
Yeah,
I don't even think it's a pruning thing. Like, I think it's not only doubled our audience, but probably like quadrupled it, because it's like, we're like a country band that, like, punk people is like, oh, it's okay for me to like country. And same thing with the country people, like, oh, I don't really listen to punk music, but it's kind of okay for me to like this. And yeah, so we're getting people that come in that wouldn't have otherwise. That, like, if we were like, hey, we're a country band, the country people will go like, no, you're not. Like, that was, yeah. I remember our very early show, a guy comes up to Josh and goes, I don't know what this is. It ain't country, but I like it.
But I do like it.
10 years later. Like, and we're like, yeah, it's not really country. And it's not really punk. It's both and it's neither. It's like, it's its own thing, and it's become acceptable for a large amount of people to like. And it doesn't really stick in this one lane. So it's not like, oh, now they went a little different direction, I can't like this anymore, because it's not as punk as it used to be, or it's not as country as it used to be. It's always just been a free-forming, just like, we just do whatever the fuck, and it works out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, from an artistic standpoint, I feel like we've always wanted to just be and exist the way that we are naturally. And like in Texas, there's just so much that you can feed off of. So it was really easy for us to have an eclectic sound. We're not the only band that's like that from the state. I feel like that's kind of a bit of a Texas musician, is having so many different influences and cultures kind of thrown into all together.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to hit on next, man. Like, the thing with Texas, the Texas scene, especially now, like the easiest, aside from you guys, the easiest other example would probably be like a guy like Coe Wetzel, right? Like, he started out with the Texas country stuff. He went to like a rock grunge type of deal. Now he's doing like pop stuff, and like, there might be some pruning there, like you said. But it's like, it shows like who the real, you know, it sticks, the real fans stick around while gathering others on the way. That's kind of the way I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, we all want to have lifetime fans, I guess. I don't want it to ever affect the creative process, worrying about what somebody's going to think or whatever. And served us really well. Like, we've had very little backlash,
yeah,
ever, you know, musically. But it's been, you know, it's been great. Every time we do something, it accumulates to something larger. And I feel like as long as we retain that impact, it's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. And nowadays, like, you see it everywhere, like the genre bending, like, I don't even know why there are genres, to be quite frank with you, because like nowadays people play what the hell they want, and if it's good music, it's going to do well. And like, I think that's the end game right there.
Yeah.
I mean, genres are for record stores, and like, there ain't record stores anymore. So like, you know, we could all be on the same Spotify playlist or whatever. It doesn't really matter.
It's more vibes now than genres. Yeah. Vibes. Cool. Yeah.
Like, it made sense when they were trying to figure out what shelf to put you on so the customer could find you quicker, but like, you know, it doesn't really matter anymore, because you're just a, you know, 10 letters into a Google search engine, and there you are. So like, it doesn't really do anything anymore other than that.
Yeah. And I think, and I'm completely ignorant to how festivals set their lineups, but I see a lot of it with like festivals and everything. Like, you got like the country festivals and the punk festivals, the rock festivals, all this stuff, and it's like, you nowadays you don't know what you're gonna see. Like, they're like, you see like a country festival and Nelly's gonna be on it, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of cool how that works. And I guess, have you guys played festivals? I assume you played festivals before, right?
Oh yeah, lots of them.
So what are your guys' thoughts on festivals? Because I get like a mixed review of them whenever I talk to artists. Some people say it's the most chaotic shit they've been a part of. Some of them say that it's like the best shit that they're a part of. So what are your guys' view on playing festivals like that?
I mean, all of music is pretty chaotic and hard. But I always considered us a festival band. Like when some of our best shows have been on festival stages. When we first started, there was this old 97th County Fair that Corey and I really wanted to be on, and we got to play the second year. And that was a big moment for us. There's also, like, in the country scene, the barbecue festivals kind of pay the bills. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, oh yeah. And so you play those and you do the regional stuff. Every small town has like a little music series. Like, I consider us a festival band. We're far too loud to be a listening room band. So it's kind of nice to, when we get to play outdoors and do the open air thing.
Yeah. So I guess going off that, then how would you guys describe your live show? Because I agree with you. I haven't seen you live, but I've seen videos of you guys live, and it looks like a blast and very energetic. Yeah. So how would you guys describe it?
Visceral,
interactive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. High energy for sure. You know, the songs are the songs. I feel like the albums kind of give you the lyrics, give you the idea of what the music sounds like. And then when you go to the show, it's your job to sing along and, you know, become a part of the performance. Those are when it's at the best. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just a really fucking loud Americana band.
So. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, call and response stuff and clapping and hand waving, and we definitely encourage everyone to yell all the words back to us. We hate standing still on stage, and we hate when the audience is standing still looking at us.
And we're sitting down.
Rarely, like, you know, it happens every once in a while where, like, we'll be going all out and everyone will just be, I don't know if they're not getting it or they're just too dumbfounded, but like, they'll be standing there and it's like really frustrating. And then, like, it makes us not want to move, and then we kind of shut down. So it's like, it's a really free-flowing exchange of energy where, like, we'll give it out and we'll get it back. And most of the time, it's a two-way street where just everyone leaves sweaty and exhausted, and that's a good night.
Yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship between the crowd and the band, for sure. Definitely not a restaurant band. It's pretty hard to sing along when you have a mouthful of burger. So in the early days, those restaurant gigs just to make ends meet were just very awkward and painful for everyone. So if you were at one of those, I'm very sorry. But as we've moved into like theaters and bigger clubs and like, you know, the opening slot, the 30-minute opening slot for a packed house is game on for this band. And I feel like the songs are simple too. So like once you're there and you hear the chorus once or twice, you pretty much got it. And so it's really fun to watch people figure it out. Even in those standing room ones where it doesn't feel like the energy is kind of transferring, I really like seeing the people kind of figure it out by the end of it. And then when we do 500 miles at the end of the show, everybody knows that song. Everybody mm-hmm. does the da-da-da-das, and then they walk out and they feel like good. And like, that's the whole point of the band anyway. It's just to make people feel good.
Right. So you guys are, you mentioned earlier, like some of the groups you were touring with. I know you mentioned Bowling for Soup and Old 97s and everything. So when you tour with these guys who've like, namely like Bowling for Soup, those kind of guys, those like pop punk bands or whatever, do you still feel like today, when you go out with these guys, that you're still learning stuff from them, like any advice or any kind of like touring advice? Yeah. Any examples?
Oh, I mean, I try to soak up as much as possible. You know, some of the bands that we go out on the road have been on the road for 20, 30 years. Of mm-hmm. course they know more than us. I'm on my 9th year of being in my first touring band. Like, as far as it, regardless of my own age, like, the road numbers are completely different. Yeah. So when we were out with Lucero for the first time, there was this tour manager, Jimmy, And he taught us how to be the greatest opening band of all opening bands ever by like giving us these parameters and boundaries and like tough love. And it really made us prepared for when we got those bigger opening dates with like Flogging Molly or Bowling for Soup or Turnpike, where we had all of this unwritten rule, like discipline. And so we went in and we didn't show our ass and we got called back and it was great. And that, you know, as far as like stage moves and stuff, Dave King is the greatest showman, frontman ever. I learned great banter from Jarrett Reddick. How to command a crowd from the Turnpike guys, and I learned how to do the best power stance in the world by the toes. So, yeah. It's like you always try to pick up something from those people, and when they when they elevate for relationship wise from mentor to friend, it's a really, really surreal and beautiful thing. But I always try to go in, especially when I'm touring with like an established band that, you know, I look up to, just try to have a student mindset when I walk in and pick up whatever I can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Jarrett Reddick, 'cause I saw Bowling for Soup for the first time, like last year, and it was a fantastic concert, but also doubled as like, it's like a stand up act too. Like I haven't seen a frontman like that ever. I don't think.
He's got a tight hour and a half for sure.
I mean, you don't have to play as many songs. It's smart.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
They figured it out.
Keep the effort, you know, right there.
It's like they're getting older, you know. They got to catch their breath, and he's like, they trick you into not realizing they're doing it by telling you some jokes.
Yeah. They taught us how to play in an arena. Like we played our first arena with them. And Less Than Jake at the beginning of the year, and we've never fucking done that.
Yeah.
And it was a learning curve, the whole thing. That whole tour, we'd never been on a bus. It was our first bus tour. Like, they taught us a lot. JR from Less Than Jake, the saxophone player, I had a moment where I needed a heart-to-heart from somebody, and that was the person that gave it to me. And, you know, I will always cherish that. It's always good when you go out with the older guys and you go out with those established bands. And luckily enough, I grew up on all of the bands that we get to go play with. Like, mm-hmm. So this is like a full circle fruition type stuff too. Like, I love Lucero. I love Bowling for Soup. Love Flogging Molly. Love Old 97s. Love Turnpike. It's been really, really great. It's been an honor.
Right on. Did you both like kind of come from a punk background?
I mean, yeah. Corey was like a really, when I met him, he was in a band called Whiskey Folk Ramblers, which was like the biggest Americana band in town. He was also like a lead writer at the coolest music, at the coolest music magazine, and online, website. And, I don't know if I'd ever call him punk, but he was definitely like one of the coolest dudes in town for sure.
Tricked you.
Were you? Yeah.
Sucker. You're a sucker.
Yeah. He's a punk, like deep, deep, deep down, like core value size for sure.
I grew up listening to like nonstop grunge music, honestly.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, still in the van, that's like my go-to, is put it on the 90s channel, you know?
Yeah, you're almost, you're pretty much Gen X in my brain, even though you're kind of a millennial.
Yeah, I'm millennial, but I wish I wasn't, you know?
Barely, barely.
Yeah, awesome. So let's talk a bit about like your guys' writing creative process and everything. So first off, where do you guys record at usually? What's your setup for that?
Well, this time it was Sonic Ranch in Texas, in Tornillo, which was the craziest experience we've ever had. It's not usually like that. We've kind of floated around, studio wise and producers wise, just kind of working with people that we want to work with and have fun creating. as far as a band, like I'll write or Corey will write a song and then we bring it to the band and it kind of fully forms there. Yeah.
Gotcha. So
this time was
good.
I said this time was a little different for us because we were working with Ted Hunt, which was a big hero of yours, Josh. And,
yeah.
He really helped define this next record that we got coming out next year. You know, we had the bones of all the songs, but we didn't get so far along in the full band writing process till we got with him. And I mean, we chipped away at him a little bit, but he really took them to like a new place and really helped say like from an outside perspective, here's who I think you guys are as a band. Here's what I see who you are. And he's like, oh yeah, that's really interesting. That is exactly who we are. But sometimes you can't see it because you're too close, or you know, you're seeing it from the other perspective, first person instead of a third person. So everyone's saying like, this is who you are, and here's what I think. This is what it is. It really helps define like, okay, here's some boundaries going forward of like, here's how to make this record a really solid, like unified sound. And I think he did an awesome job with that. And so I think, you know, this next record coming out too is, it's going to sound different, but also like bigger, better, more polished, more defined. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. I didn't know how much I could dive into that. Ted flipped my writing process upside down completely. As far as like where we're going next year, I spent 2 years writing with somebody on the road and writing back and forth in fragments. And I had, you know, a bushel of all these very personal songs, and same with Corey. And then we went into the studio and picked the cream of each one and then completely deconstructed every single part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the fly and having to, you know, dig really deep. And it was really wonderful working with a legend like that. I mean, he's worked with a lot of my favorite bands, like Old Crow Medicine Show, Gaslight Anthem, Flogging Molly, Dropkick Murphys, Bouncing Souls. He's a really, really brilliant musician and a very creative producer. And he also just kind of gives like an overall vibe of that the things that we want to do out of reflex, what if we kind of were mindful of that and tried to, you know, change the script just enough, you know, to become a little bit more artistic. And it was really, really cool. And speaking of learning a ton of things, I'll be taking all of those lessons with me forever. It's great.
Yeah. So when you work with someone like that, or like any kind of like outside guy in general, is it kind of hard at first to like hand over the keys per se and say like, all right, what do you think? Like your creative process on this, like how's that whole process go in your mind?
I mean, there's always, you want to be the kind of writer that you write something and everybody's like, that's fucking brilliant, let's track it. But just isn't always like that. So when you hire somebody like a producer, you really want to work with somebody that you first respect, and then second, like, will, you know, that you feel has, you know, that missing piece that you need to create what you're trying to create or manifest what you're trying to manifest. And Ted was a no-brainer for me because those are so many of his records are in my collection, and mm-hmm. So, you know, some of them are in my top 10 favorite records of all time. So it was really easy for me to go in and create a record with him instead of having a record that I allowed him to be a part of, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was much easier with that situation. It's always been, because I feel like that's what makes the best art, mm-hmm. is when you say yes more than you say no. So yeah. It was really, really great working with him in that capacity. And I try to keep a level head and the ego at bay, and always allow the keys to rotate around the room, not just me have them kind of thing, or anyone in the band.
I think from the beginning, we've always kind of wanted someone to help us, you know, be more hands-on. And I know a lot of bands don't. They're like, this is my creative thing, and I'm this is how it goes. This is my art. I made this. And we've worked with 3 or 4 other producers, and you know, I don't think we've ever gotten as produced as this time, but I don't think it's, you know, I don't think that was intentional on our part. Like, I know we've always kind of wanted to be produced more heavily. Maybe just because we're six, you know, big personalities. We all have six different sets of influences that we bring to the table, and everyone's got things that they want to bring into the record. And, you know, it takes kind of a strong, confident personality to say, okay, let's do this other way. When I have 6 other people tell me something else. But we're all, you know, we all respect the hell out of Ted, so when he would say stuff, we'd go, yeah, let's try that. That sounds awesome. And I think we always wanted a guy to come in like that and do that. So we are really receptive of it. I think we really were open to everything he suggested on this new record.
Yeah, it's our 5th record.
Yeah.
And it was so fun. It was so fun to do because we had the time. We were in a place where we didn't have to leave. We were fully immersed every day. And it just felt very magical to an extent, like being able to just suddenly have a song that never existed before just right in our hands. But it feels like it, you know, he would take pieces that were years old or, you know, songs that I didn't think he was going to pick and just completely, you know, upend them. And it was really, really creative. It was so fun. Yeah. Would do it again.
Yeah, man. And having, like you said, like 6 influences and all that, like all in one room. And it sounds like you guys are pretty close too. Like, that's what keeps it interesting. And like, it shows with bands like that, like you guys, because that's what makes it unique and like consistently fresh. Like, I feel like some bands, like, they have their sound, but if they don't keep making it fresh, it could become kind of bland. And, you know, like, you see examples of that sometimes, but like you guys, like, it's fresh, I feel like. And is that something that you guys, like, not necessarily worry about, but like, is that something in your mind? Like, we got to keep making this, like, progress to something else or make this new, or is it kind of natural?
I feel like that's just a natural disposition of everybody in the band. We always want to be like, we always want to be stronger, faster, smarter. Maybe not a insatiable taste for more is the right way to describe it, but there's always a, you know, you want to progress, you know, as a band, as a person, as a musician, as a writer. And when you do that, you don't have to think about those things. And so we went into this album with I had a completely different life experience going into this album. So I wrote from a completely different life experience. And the creative process at the studio ushered in a whole other set of inspirations and sounds and words. And yeah, it really is not, it's easier to do than to think about it before you do. So we just try not to think so much.
I think every time you make a record, you're trying to make like the perfect record. And every time you get out of the studio, you think you've done it. And then you know, through the mixing and mastering process, and then through like listening to it, you'll hear on the radio or whatever, you go, oh no, I hear like a mistake here. I hear like 6 things here. And you hear a million things that you would have done different. And that happens on every record that anyone's ever made.
Yes.
And any record that will ever make that the same thing. And so you those like the 6 things from the previous record, I'm going to not do those on the next one. And so now I think I've made the perfect record again. And then like, oh, now we've got it mastered. And I hear like 4 things I would have done different. And it's like, and that's just going to, you know, so you just want to keep doing that over and over and over until like there's fewer and fewer things. But just by the nature of that, every record's going to be a little bit better than the one before it. And I think that's, you know, the case with us. I think every record's been better than the one before it.
Yeah.
I know.
We're pretty critical of ourselves. And we do scrutinize over detail So there is thought, but it is, you know, when you're talking about how do we keep it fresh or anything like that, I mean, the last thing on our mind is that I think we're just trying to figure out how the fuck to make this song the best song it could possibly be,
right,
with the tools that we have, whether Corey's playing a trumpet or a harmonica, whether I'm singing low or high, whether there's harmonies or no harmonies, hand claps or group or you know, it's we just keep throwing, we try to find the right mixture of everything where the song can be the best that the song can be. And then once it's there, then we move on to the next song.
Sometimes you're in the studio and you see a fun toy in the corner and you're like, how can we put this, where will this fit?
how can I shoehorn this tiny little baby organ?
Yeah, or like, that guitar Dustin was using the baritone.
Yeah, the 12 string.
He sees a baritone guitar and we're like, how can we put this on a record? All of a sudden it's on every song.
It's on every song.
You're just having fun. You go, oh man, that's awesome. Where else can we put it?
Yeah. It's hard to describe. The metaphor I would throw out there is kind of like painting. You know, you don't want to put too much. You don't want to put too much on the canvas and then everything get muddy. But if you put all the right things in all the right order in the right way, at the end of it, you have this beautiful picture. And that's always the goal, you know, and you never really know how it's going to happen that way. But you do know when you hear it, you're like, yes, this is done. And it feels great.
Awesome. So while we're on the topic of the album, and you guys hit on a lot of points there, but if there is anything you could say with the upcoming music you guys have coming out, what do we have to what can we expect from it? Well, what are we going to hear when we press play?
Growth?
I don't. Yeah.
I mean, hopefully
it's the band at the potential. Like, I feel like this band has always been like, people see the potential in us, but we have to get to it. Hopefully it's an actualization of the potential that we've always thought we had. I feel like they're the best songs we've ever written. It's the best musical performances we've ever played. It's in the best studio you could possibly be in with one of the best producers of all time. We tried to be really, really honest to a fault. I think that tonally it's a shift for the band. And as far as like who we are as people, I feel like we've all developed into these mature, you know, grown ass men. And it's been really, really cool to see to grow up with all these dudes. It's really great. It was really cool to be in that studio situation where everybody was playing at their highest level.
It's a confident, it's really proud of my friends. I think it's really confident, and it's like it's just like, here's the songs. I'm gonna make them the best they can be, and not have to worry about like, oh, we're not cowpunk enough, or we're not country enough, or we're not punk enough. It's like, we didn't think about any of that. We're just like, here's the songs, like, let's make it the best it can be, and like, the rest will figure itself out later. Like,
yeah.
What if we make a record with like 10 very slow songs, and then will our punk people still come to the shows? Like, we didn't do that. I was just saying, we didn't think about that. We weren't going, if we make a record that's too punk, will the country people stop coming to the shows? We didn't think about that. We just made the 10 best songs, the 10 best ways they could be. And like, to that end, I think we succeeded.
Yeah, it's the best Vandaliers record there is.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pumped up to hear it, guys. I can't wait. And we'll close out with this question, because I love asking artists this, because it's always different takes on it. So especially you guys who've been around for a while now, you guys got to see the way social media has changed, streaming has changed. They got the TikTok shit now. Basically, I just want to know how you guys have evolved into that, or if you haven't at all, I guess. Like, what's your guys' view on that?
It's just another fucking thing on the plate. I'm open to every type of creativity there is. when I feel like making a TikTok video, I'll make a TikTok video. Corey's great at Twitter. Instagram has always been the most fun because I feel like you get to like kind of be a part of it and see things more in real time. But yeah, when we started, it was Facebook, and then it turned into Instagram, then it turned into TikTok and everything else. As long as whatever we can do, as long as we can find the people who we need to connect with and bring our music to the people that want to hear it, I'll use anything that we possibly can. As far as habitually, I could be better at it.
Yeah, I think the content creation like aspect of it's kind of an ass whip, but as far as like the reason I enjoy still being on these apps, which can sometimes they're not the funnest thing. They could be little cesspools, and they can they can make you grumpy. you can kind of turn you into a little asshole sometimes.
But I'm too sensitive for Twitter is what he's trying to say.
Well, no, like even me, I'll be on there sometimes just reading like this. Oh my god, and just getting fired up and like, oh, why am I this way? Why am I having a bad? Oh, it's because I've read like 100 meme tweets in a row. Like, but the reason
everything.
The reason I want to be on there still is just like it's a direct line of communication between us and fans. It's just like being, you know, we'll stand at the merch booth after pretty much every show, and we'll shake every hand till everyone leaves. And like some days we don't have a show, so it's like the virtual merch booth that we all are standing by, and like it's instant feedback and it's instant like glimpses into our personal lives. And it's like if I'm posting about what I cook for dinner, and then like somebody says, oh, I had that too, or here's a different, here's an ingredient to try next time you make that. You can have a conversation about that, like it's life, and like I feel like we'll know each other a little bit better, and like have a little more personal connection. It's not just like here's some people standing and looking down on you and playing songs in front of you, and that's all you ever see is this facade of shirtless sweat. You know, like we're human beings, and I think we built a connection with people, and they do really feel like they know us better than that. And you know, there's a lot of fans that have become our friends because of that.
Yeah, I think that's a little less mystery than the rock and roll stars of yonder. But I really love like our Troublemakers fan group. We're really involved with. I love that group so much.
I do too.
Helped us. They helped us through everything. I mean, they got us through the pandemic. They've gotten us through label droppings. They've gotten us into the studio for this new record. Like, we have the best fans in the world. And that group on Facebook has been incredible, just like the Twitter has been incredible. And if I can figure out how to get over my anxiety, I will get on TikTok a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. Make some Facebook. The group is called Troublemakers VFFV. And you know, it's like a private group. You have to like ask to join, but you know, we accept everyone that's not a bot, basically. And so many of our fans just get in there and interact with each other. And like, I'm going to this show. Who's coming with me? And like, I've seen people that have never met, but people in that group that have never met, and then they start hanging out in that group. Then you see them in real life hanging out, and then all of a sudden you see them like at each other's like life stuff, where it's like, we're making friends together.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is awesome. It's really cool to watch that. And anyway, be a part of it. Troublemakers VFFV. It's the only reason I haven't deleted my Facebook, honestly.
Yeah, I love that group so much. It's like the only thing I actually interact with on a consistent level. Like it's so great.
Yeah, and that is one thing that stood out to me was you guys got a loyal ass fan base, that's for sure. And the Twitter is killer. I didn't even know who you guys were at the time, and I was following you guys just for what you guys tweeted. So it was some good shit. Yeah. But guys, Josh, Corey, thank you for hopping on. This was awesome. Been looking forward to this for a little bit. And I guess before we go, if you guys have any plugs, socials, whatever you got, you already kind of hit on that too, but if you have anything else, the floor is yours.
November, Lucero, whole month, nationwide. Find the dates.
Yes, sir. And then end of the year, we're closing out our year with a little run of the Toadies, but we also have a big show that we need some help selling tickets for, Kane's Ballroom. Ooh. Us, Joshua, Ray Walker, and Silverado, triple headlining bill. We're all going to be up on stage playing with each other, and that was my favorite show we did last year, so we're running it back. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. You guys heard them. Go do that, and also while you're at it, look up Rowdy Alternative, Raise Rowdy. We're on all the socials. We've got a website. Just Google us, and we'll fucking show up. So anyway, you guys, thanks for listening. This is the Vandaliers, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks.
Peace.
My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight?